You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where another year has passed and so little yet so much has changed. As I looked over last year's award show outline, I realized how influential the stories, shows, movies, and people we discussed in 2014 were on my 2015. In the news, we highlighted Iron Man being made into a villain and the Sexodus, changes in our culture that affected me on a deeply personal level as I figured out my life over the last 12 months. In our awards, most of the recipients of my personal commendations became a steady and steadying presence in my life. So as we look back over the last year, I'll enjoy celebrating what made it great, but I'll also keep in mind how those things will make 2016 great as well. Joining me today, via Skype, from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards. What are you most proud of over the last year, Daniel?
Having seen Star Wars.
Really?
No!
I was going to say, that's kind of second-handed.
Although I have become even more obsessed with it since our last podcast, but we'll keep that to a minimum. Although,
well, I don't blame you on that, by the way, because even I'm reading fan theories, which if I'm doing it, I can't imagine what you're doing.
Exactly. It involves tissues and never mind. So I guess what am I most proud of from this year? Well, I didn't start a new job this year for the first time in a long time. So there's that. But really, I guess, I'm proud of, are we counting the year as in only 2015 or 365 days ago?
2015. We're doing it arbitrarily because of what we're doing with the calendar right now. Fall in line with society, Daniel.
God damn it. Okay. I'm horrible at that. So I guess it had to be work related, which is, I just really and honestly and truly and utterly kicked ass at my job this year.
I think that's a wonderful thing, and I think it's wonderful that you're able to be proud of the fact that you stayed in one job the whole year.
Yes, as a millennial, that went against everything I believe and know.
I know, but I'm already, I started my job in June, and, today I was already having anxiety. I was like, I can't stay here much longer. I'm freaking out.
Exactly. Gotta go somewhere else, need a raise.
I did
well, and we kicked ass at the Federal Society and did a lot of wonderful things. So, that was good.
Awesome. And speaking of people who didn't stay in a job for the whole year, also joining us via Skype from the House of Mouse, Elliot Rivera. What are you most proud of this year, Elliot? Was it saying, oh shit?
No. Oh shit's not the problem. It's don't say it on a microphone in front of people. That's problem.
At Disneyland, let's be clear, at Disney World, because comedians, please do that.
Here, it's encouraged. Oh shit, oh shit, oh shit. Oh shit, oh shit, oh shit.
Set up a counter, like that South Park episode. I think the thing that I'm the most proud of this year, in a lot of ways, is just kind of like, I feel like I've really integrated very well into myself. I think that I've always had self-confidence issues. Some of it's appearance, a lot of it is, certain things. Like, I love to sing. I like writing, and there are a lot of things like that I've never really put out on a public platform as much as I had this year, particularly with singing. I've gone on a lot of auditions and I've participated in a lot of different productions, and I'm proud of that. I'm very, very proud that I'm stepping out more as a musician this year, and hopefully I will do that next year too.
That's awesome. I'm glad to hear that. And that's part of why we do this podcast, is to get ourselves comfortable with being out in a public forum.
And how about you, host of the show? What are you proud of this year?
I was going to save that for the what I learned portion of this.
Oh, okay. You can tease it. But, give us just the tip.
Just the tip.
That's a lot with me. But,
Periscope right now. Hold on. Wait.
No.
Is that because it's all tip, or?
I have a shirt. Yeah, it's just the tip. Mm-hmm. No, I have a shirt on right now, Elliot. But I mean, I think I'm starting a lot of personal growth right now, which I'm really proud of. But I also like that I committed to getting the footage in the can to finish season one of How to Zombie. It hasn't been released yet, but you know, the fact that I did it and I organized all that and I made that happen. And you know, obviously the director, Stewart, helped a lot, and I don't want to like downplay what he did. But the fact that I said, hey, I'm going to finish this, and then I did, makes me really proud. And also the fact that we had the exact same number of normal episodes of this podcast, 43, as we did last season, 43, I think that's pretty tremendous and consistent. And that's Bill Belichick would say we're doing our job, I think.
We are fucking a machine.
But
not like putting a penis in the machine. Yeah. We are, okay.
I was going to say, is it a sex robot?
Ouch.
Yeah, I didn't want to say we were a fucking machine because that had connotations, but the other way also had, so I was screwed either way. Well, much like the machine.
Recent events have shown me I might be a fucking machine, but anyway. Sex robots haven't been invented yet, but the year has given us a lot of crazy things. Let's recount the best stories of 2015 in the news with Daniel T. Richards.
It was a year of farce and a year of whimsy and a year of racism and sports and dating and many other things. Oh, 2015, how we were going to miss you. Not that much. But is 2016 we're going to really be that much better? I suspect we're going to see a lot of the stories we did in 2015 pop their ugly little heads back up, just like the fucking whack-a-mole game. Remember the whack-a-mole game? In this case, it's more like whack a social justice warrior.
Whack-a-pole is what they did in World War II.
Hmm.
I can make that. I'm Polish. I can make that joke.
That's hilarious. Holocaust humor. Yeah.
I just finished watching The Man in the High Castle, so cut me some slack. Where they somehow make you identify with that one Jewish character, and the one Nazi character. And you're kind of like rooting for him at the end. You root for Hitler.
Yeah, I'll talk a little bit about that phenomenon in The Best and the Rest, concerning the show The Americans. But, so, here we have for you the top five news stories that we covered in 2015. But first, we're going to start with an honorable mention. Because 2015 was, as much as anything else, the year of trans. Not Trans-Ams, not Transformers, but trans just about everything else.
Not transcontinental travel, we didn't finally master that.
Nope, not the Transcontinental Railroad. Nope, was not that trans. It was not transatlantic. No.
Did Transylvania 2 come out? Hotel Transylvania 2, did that come out?
It did, in fact, come out. But
I'm
no
holding my
it.
Arms out asking for adoration right now.
And we also banned trans fat this year. So, you know, generally the year of trans. But in more about transing the penis. But there's one particular story that did not involve Caitlyn Jenner that we covered that I thought was worthy of honorable mention, if not in the top five, which was becoming disabled by choice, not chance. Trans-abled people feel like imposters in their fully working bodies. Yes, this is directly out of Canada. Where else? This was the study of people who feel like they should have been born disabled. And so thus they disable themselves through surgery or bleach in their eye in one case or pushing themselves downstairs, etc. And this is the, of course, new era of civil rights, and we need to respect these people and their transness.
Right, because we had a long episode where we debated transgender. And we said, is it mutilation? Like that South Park episode made the joke about, you know, you just end up to be a freak with mutilated genitals. Is there some legitimacy behind it? But transabled takes it to the extreme where you're actually harming yourself in order to quote unquote feel more normal. I mean, are people who commit suicide, trans alive, trans life, trans, did you get what I'm saying?
Trans living.
Right.
Yes.
Or did you see there was the one guy who, he was popular, I don't know, was it a month ago, 2 months ago, because he was trans aged, where he lived with two adults and he would come home and dress like a little girl?
Yeah, he's emotionally 7 years old or something like that.
Right. Which, yes, that's a sign of trauma, right? That you don't progress beyond the emotional age where you suffered the trauma. Katrina was telling me that. I just want to put that in there because she would have been like, why didn't you give me credit? You got your credit, Katrina.
Katrina, we love you.
We miss you. Come back. So, yeah, that's definitely
coming horrible. In 2016.
But... so this was definitely the year of trans, and we had to throw one trans story in there just to make sure we hit our quota. Otherwise, we'll be fined by someone, I'm sure. Do you see that New York City is going to start fining, like, city workers who misidentify people based on their gender?
Yeah, she used the wrong pronoun.
Yeah. Qu'est-ce que fuck?
We just had to make sure we were very transcendental with our story choices.
Yes, we wanted to make sure that the selection was, the process was translucent. Ooh, and we were transparent.
Which is a show on Amazon.
Yes. And we didn't commit a transgression against the audience.
So that's a good too. Let's go to number five here, which is Elliot's favorite story ever.
Oh gosh.
Elliot's favorite story, where he said there could be no more farce to be witnessed. And that was number five. The 12-year-old girl who tried to kill her mom with bleach for taking away her iPhone.
But before we talk about how ridiculous this is, I would just like to point out, there was clearly more farce to witness because this show is still going. Sorry, Elliot.
Otherwise, at the time, I was certain that this was our version of breaking the internet.
Right. This was Elliot's version of environmentalism, where he thought we had hit peak farce.
Yeah.
And then farce fracking was invented, and now we are just fucking up to our necks in farce. So.
Yeah, this was before Donald Trump became a serious contender.
Good thing we opened up the farce global market, because, my God, there's a lot of farce to go around. Oh, so, man. Just to remind you, this was a HuffPost story. The girl allegedly tried to poison her mother's drink with cleaning fluid two different times. The first time, the woman felt ill after drinking a smoothie and smelled some bleach in it, but chalked it up to the girl failing to clean the glass properly. The second time she smelled bleach in her beverage, mom confronted her daughter, and her daughter told her that she was trying to kill her for taking away her iPhone. Yes.
Well, she was honest.
Yeah, that's the thing about, like, she's so deceitful. Like, she's trying to kill her mom, but she's just like, yeah, I'm trying to kill you. You took my phone.
Yes, can you see the parent here? Now, I'm slowly dying of poisoning, but at least you told me the truth.
I just see the her keeling over and the kid grabbing her phone, reaching down to her mom's pocket, taking it out, and skipping away.
Indeed. No, you don't need your iPhone that bad, children, so please don't kill your parents, in case anyone out there is considering this. We here at the Midside absolutely do not condone parent murder.
I have a better one.
Patricide.
Patricide, yeah.
This would be matricide, actually.
I
actually have another one. I don't condone giving your 12-year-old kid an iPhone.
Come on, man. Don't you want to be the cool dad?
No.
You're still part of the patriarchy.
That's well, by right. the time your children are old enough to have iPhones, they will not have to have iPhones anymore because they'll have chips implanted in their head.
Yeah, I know.
As Adam Carolla says, they'll just be fucking their own avatar. So that's what he says his children have to look forward to.
Doesn't this remind you a little bit of, like, Joan Cusack in Adam's Family Values? They gave me Malibu Barbie. That's not what I wanted. So she burns the house. That's what I think of when I see this story.
Love a good Addams Family reference. Wildly underrated movies.
Yes.
All right, moving on to number four in the racism category. We have one of my favorite stories, personal favorite stories of the year, and I think one that Justin still references to this day, which is banned students suspended for giving rivals fruit basket accused of being racially motivated. Yes, this was the Anacostia High School band members who, in a supposed show of good faith, gave the rival high school a basket of fruit, which contained a small watermelon, coconut, pineapple, and watermelon gum, which the other team says was racist.
I think this is actually the first time I heard what was in the basket. Like, didn't we debate last time that we had no idea what was in the basket and that we pointed out that the store, nobody was telling us?
Oh, maybe. Maybe I found a new store that had
I remember you mentioned watermelon in the basket. I remember that. But I don't remember anybody complaining about it from the other team. I thought that was what that was the issue, is that there was all this controversy and nobody had actually complained about it.
Yes, that's true. Still no one has really complained about it. I did, helpful listener Amber, who lives in Texas where this took place, did correct us, by the way, because one of the funny things about this story was that they came from the Independent School District of Humble, H-U-M-B-L-E, but in fact, it is more fucking Texas than that. The name of the ISD is actually Humble, with no pronunciation of the H.
Eddie Izzard's angry.
Humble ISD. Yes, and I call it Humble because there's a fucking H in it.
Yeah, Eddie Izzard will never perform there now.
Yes, it's true.
Also because they would be mad at him for dressing like a woman.
Get those heels off, you fag! I can hear it in the audience. So the students, of course, still contend they didn't do anything wrong. We wouldn't do that because we know better than that. Our parents raised us better, said Carolina Adven Verde, who plays the flute. I'm the worst news person because I cannot pronounce names.
Well, it's
all
extra funny that you can't pronounce a Hispanic name.
Shut up.
During a racism story.
Shut up. Shut up. Senior Alyssa Taylor, thank you, Alyssa, for having a normal name.
Yeah, you whitey.
Said,
thank you.
No. Well,
she could be black.
No. She said, I'm mixed race.
Ah.
In fact, she said, I'm mixed, and the news article put race in parentheses.
Well, she could be mixed emotions.
I don't take offense to that. How could someone else take offense?
Well, because
that's right, Alyssa.
That's because you're only mixed feminist, Alyssa. You're mixed
that's
equal
right.
rights. You're not fully black, so you can't understand.
Yeah, eat a little bit of humble pie there, Alyssa. No, it's humble pie, because we're not stupid. So, band members, racist, story number 4. Moving on to story number 3, which may be Justin's personal favorite of the year. Although, we'll see. But
no,
number 3,
number 1 is
in the dating and internet category, drumroll please. Almost none of the women in the Ashley Madison database ever used the site. Yes, this was the expose story from Gizmodo that looked at all of the data of the people from the Ashley Madison link and found that an abysmal number of them were quote-unquote women, and then in fact that abysmal number contained people who almost never logged in to the website. In fact, of the more than, what was it? Of the more than 5 million out of, by the way, 31 million men, 5 million women who had accounts on the site, only 1,492 of them had ever checked a message. That's terrible odds right there.
It's impossible odds. And the reason we put this one so high, and we put this one as number 3 above the, you know, the band members and the racism and the 12-year-old trying to kill her mother, is I think this really is the first indicator in our culture that we need to stop taking the internet so seriously, and we need to stop taking social media so seriously, and we need to stop taking online dating so seriously. I mean, we saw this the previous year, didn't we, where most of the people posting about Obamacare on the Obamacare website were the same person, or like 100 users or something?
Yeah, 100 users left something like 16,000 comments. Yeah.
Right. And we give credit to these dating sites and these social media sites as if there's this great number of people using them. Facebook came out this year, was it? They finally crossed 1 billion profiles, they said?
1 billion logins or something like that.
Right.
There was a weird way of measuring it, but
right.
Yeah.
But they're intentionally doing it that way because there's no way it's actually 1 billion people. 1/7 of the planet is not using Facebook, because how many of those are fake profiles? You watch the show Catfish, one person creates an entire network of people to make it look like their fake profiles are real. So I think the Ashley Madison scandal was the first time we really are starting to wake up and say, hey, none of this is real. We need to be more reality-based and figure out how to make this a tool for reality and not a replacement for it.
Right. Exactly. Then, by the way, just to modify your statement a little bit, this was the first time we had empirical evidence to suggest that we should not take the internet seriously.
Yes, that's what I meant. Sorry, that was the surprise premise. Thank you for...
a rule, but this was kind of like the first, first evidentiary support that we had.
Right. Thank you for making me sound smarter than I am.
Yes, there you go. We're going to go ahead and skip here because I think these last, the top two stories were really near and dear to our hearts. And I think in my mind, it was very difficult to distinguish between which one was number two and which one was number one. But ultimately, we had to make a decision. Well, the public relies on us to parse out these nuances.
Yeah.
So,
and I think the reason number two is number two is because of the use of the word idiots in the article title, which makes it less important than number one, because the idiots are actually hurting us in number one in a much more direct way than number two.
That's
though
true.
They are hurting us in number two as well.
That's true. So, the number two news story from 2015, covered on the Midside, was Deflategate is a tale told by idiots signifying nothing. Yes, and if you think that is an article that Justin wrote, you are wrong. It was written in Time magazine by Robert Sullivan, who's the managing editor of Life Books. Yes, so this was not some partisan hack. This was a guy at Time who said, basically, enough already, please. And in fact, he starts his column, enough already, please. Kidding. Just kidding, but pretty close. He says, I will not use the word police in a column. Well, I guess I will. I guess I just have. But as I assert that I will not use it, I do so since I'm older and the formulation which belongs to the younger era has its own point, and so it's merely appropriated. Police is, I would argue, a coin of my younger brethren. And this is where he goes off the rails. brethren in the sporting press to mean something brought out of next to nothing, which is what this whole Deflategate business is about.
I mean,
nothing.
Besides that word brethren, it does sound like I wrote it.
Yes, indeed. He says, did the Patriots cheat? Surely not. Of course, I argue for the defense. I don't know what he means there. Did they deflate balls at the margin? Blah, 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 blah. Of course they did. Did they expect pigskins to deflate in the nasty Massachusetts storm? Of course they did. And so did the NFL. So, anyway, I think the reason I chose this story over all of the Deflategate stories that we chose is because this was an editor of Time and not, you know, Mike Reese, reporter for the Boston ESPN section of the site, and not some angry Bostonian man yelling on a bar stool, but a guy who basically looked at all of the evidence and went, seriously, this is not a scandal. This is nonsense. And it's only happening because it's the Patriots and the Patriots are good.
Right, and I think that that was brought even into even more focus recently, where Peyton Manning's name was linked to HGH use. So Al Jazeera released a documentary where in the year 2011, supposedly HGH was shipped to Manning's wife, Ashley.
Yes.
Not Ashley Madison, Ashley Manning. And because of that, Manning had to come out and decry the fact that it's ridiculous that anyone ever would accuse him of using HGH. Meanwhile, he was going through recovery, physical therapy for massive neck surgery, major neck surgery that people thought he might never come back from, that he still can't feel his fingertips. And this is the thing that really points out that the whole Deflategate thing was hatred of the good.
Yeah.
People gave Manning more benefit of the doubt than they gave Brady. So Brady supposedly destroying his cell phone means he's been engaged in a scheme to deflate footballs over his entire career, whereas Manning having, you know, HGH in the same house as him while he's going through major physical therapy is less strong circumstantial evidence than a text that's called, some guy calls himself the deflator from the year before Deflategate and Brady destroying his phone. That circumstantial evidence is supposedly stronger than Manning having HGH in the same house as him the same time he's going through physical therapy for major neck surgery.
Right. Right. And the key difference here, in my opinion, is, of course, the media approach to this. The moment there was quote-unquote evidence about Deflategate, the media was all in. They were all in. They had to destroy Tom Brady. They had to destroy the Patriots. They had to destroy Belichick. And even when that evidence, for instance, the stuff that was leaked by Chris Mortensen was proved to be unequivocally false, not even kind of false, but way fucking false.
By the way, not Chris Mortensen, the director of the Money Changers. Chris Mortensen, the ESPN reporter.
Yes, those two, often confused, I hear. Yes, true, yes. The media still did not give up on the witch hunt, but from the moment this story came out, they were basically pouncing on Al Jazeera, saying, how dare you, this is ridiculous, trying to find every hole in the story. Now, that being said, I think that is the appropriate response in many ways. I think you should be skeptical of what media says, always. But not when it just prefers the people you like and hurts the people you don't like. You should always be skeptical of what the media says. And so, yes, you should attack Al Jazeera. You should look at their shoddy reporting. But you should have done that with ESPN. You should have done that with the fucking NFL and their worthless piece of shit Wells report that it's more likely than not that he was generally aware. What kind of fucking language is that?
Right. So, I have no problem with the defense of Peyton Manning, qua the defense of Peyton Manning. I only have a problem with it in relation to the non-defense of Tom Brady. That's the only reason I have a problem with it.
Right. You also used qua, which means you are in the Objective Zone Club for at least another month.
Yeah, I know. Sometimes I do that, and sometimes I use twa, like the David Blaine character on South Park. Peyton Manning, twa Peyton Manning. No, I honestly, I don't care if Peyton Manning used HGH to recover from neck surgery. If he did, good for him. Like, that was a fucking, if you can't feel your fingertips, use HGH. I want you to be able to use your fingertips. Like, I think that's valid. But that's not the point. The point is, it was just like, oh yeah, of course Manning didn't do it.
Yes. Or, of course.
This is how I feel about it, though. You know how they do the nationwide jingle for everything?
Mm-hmm.
The HGH was for my wife.
Very nice. I think there's no better close to that story than that right there. And so that, of course, brings us, folks, because yes, believe it or not, Deflategate was not the number one story of 2015. I know many of you are reeling. But
it is another duh.
It's true. The story was another duh story in a couple ways. So this was the story that I think inspired the most passion out of all three of us at one point or another.
I'm going to have to disagree with that because the episode where Tom Brady's four-game suspension was handed down immediately before we recorded, I went off on. So
you did, but that was condensed into one episode.
Okay, fair enough.
Whereas this was spread out in basically carpet bombing of many episodes across a long period of time. So the number one story of 2015. Desalination. California drought. What scarce is wisdom, not water. That's brought to us by Investors Business Daily. And the article begins, this is where we are now in California. A water market won't pop up this weekend to save the state, but market pricing would help conserve what's on hand until new resources come online. We've made this point multiple times that the price of water is set by a market rather than by bureaucrats who can't possibly know what the right price is and always let politics dictate their decision. Consumers would self-ration when the price rose. The article goes on, of course, to mention desalination, but I think really what made this story so ridiculous is that no one mentioned it on fucking anywhere other than little-known sites like Investors Business Daily, when it's the most obvious goddamn solution to the problem in the entire fucking world. And even us on the mid-side, who all we do is have access to fucking Wikipedia, could look up that you can desalinate a fucking gallon of water for something like a dollar a goddamn month.
To be fair, I didn't even use Wikipedia. I used my brain. That's been my argument from the beginning with this is, so we're running out of a thing that is 70% of the planet.
Yes.
And we're also, those of us living in California, I can get to the ocean in 20 minutes to 2 hours, depending on traffic.
Yes.
If it's right fucking there, we can make phones that receive information. I can look at a naked picture anytime I want on my phone. We can't figure out how to make drinkable water.
Yes, this also, of course, prompted me to post a picture with this story on my Facebook page. It said, apparently California is running out of water. And there was a Google Maps photo zoomed out so that you could see the entire Pacific Ocean to the left of California.
Yeah, California, we're encouraging you to go more to the left.
Yes.
Do it.
Literally to the left if you're looking at a map and reading it that way. But
I haven't gone to Cafe Press yet, by the way, and created a t-shirt that says desalinate the motherfucking ocean.
No, we need to do that. We need that. We need Belichick your premises, and we need Dark Side and Chill. Those are our three t-shirts.
Oh, there's another one. Oh, have a day. But there is another one. Actually, I think Elliot coined this one, which was Schrodinger's privilege.
Yeah, that's a good one too.
Yes.
But no,
so,
I want to bring something back here with the desalination, because I remember I did this for a bunch. $1 a day! Less than $1 a day, you can have drinkable water.
Yes. Indeed. If you cannot afford $1 a day, well, one, I'll give it to you. But two, fuck you, you deserve to die of thirst if you can't afford $1 a day.
And that's the number one thing, right? That's the number one thing people say. It's too expensive to desalinate the ocean. What the fuck?
And we did the research. We did the research. Jerry Brown can do the research. Jerry, I know someone on your staff has access to the internet. Look it up. It's $1 a day.
And then, of course, the number two thing people complain about will piss Daniel off.
Yes.
They say it hurts the environment to desalinate the ocean because the process used for desalinization is like the filter is sponges or some shit or something or other, or it leaves behind some sort of sediment or something, and then we don't know where to dispose of the sediment.
In the goddamn ocean?
Yeah, it's bizarre.
Yeah. You know what else hurts our environment? Not drinking water. Turns out that kills us. That's horrible for our environment.
Yeah.
So fuck the starfish or what other piece of shit creature is going to be quote unquote injured by this. That's not really going to be injured by this, but environmentalists are going to put on a stick and say, look, it's so adorable. Why don't you want to live? It's adorable. And we'll kick them square in the nuts and then we'll desalinate their bodies.
Now, didn't we annoy a listener of ours with this discussion?
Yeah. I think we did.
Back
yes,
on
we
the
had
Talkback or Pulp Epic days. There was one specific listener who really thought we were stupid because we wanted to desalinate the ocean.
And I barely maintained myself in the comments with him. Barely. It was hard. It was the hardest I've ever had to restrain myself from calling someone a fucking dillweed in my entire life.
To be fair, it got him to experience life as Justin for a few minutes.
True. Very true. So clearly, desalination was the story of 2015 for the Midside because of its farcical nature, its ridiculous politics, its scream-worthiness, and the fact that it is so obvious to anyone with a brain, which apparently does not include anyone in elected politics in California.
This is one of those where I identify where at with Adam Carolla, where he's like, just raise the goalpost 5 feet on either side. And it took them like 10 years to do it. I feel like when they finally desalinate, they're going to call it the Lesneski Law.
Come on, shared credit, the Midside Law.
To be fair, I was the one who got on this first.
To be fair, I was the one who got on this first.
Fine.
We've had this discussion.
Fine.
We can trace it back to me screaming about desalinating. You did coin desalinate the motherfucking ocean. We'll give you that.
Okay. So why don't we just continue arguing and yelling at each other about who saw something first and who thought what was better? Does that sound good?
Perfect.
All right. It's time for our awards in the best and rest of 2015. So what we're going to do here, to remind you, because last year was our first year, is we do a bunch of individual awards first, and then we do group awards. When we get to the group awards for the whole show, we'll talk about how that process worked. We changed it a little bit this year. But for the individual awards, we're basically doing a bunch of categories, and each of us are giving our best and rest. Best is something that was popular and good. So it's, you know, it's very common. Everyone knows it, and everyone probably thinks it's good. And then rest is something that's unpopular or forgotten and still good. What was it like? Can we think of an example of, like, one of the best rests to confuse listeners of last year?
I have one in comedy, so do you want to wait till we get there?
Okay, I was trying to give an example from last year, but let's just go into it.
Let's just get into it. They'll pick up.
Right.
They're smart.
So let's go to dramatic movie of the year. What did you guys all have for dramatic movie of the year?
I'll go first on this one, because I think mine is pretty darn conventional. I think the best dramatic movie of the year, popular, critically acclaimed, clearly good, was The Martian.
I had that as well, which to me is actually unfortunate, and it speaks to the drought we have here. Desalinate the fucking movie studios. Because I had some problems with this movie.
Yes, yes. It was not a perfect movie. It was certainly no Interstellar, which I think probably won this category last year.
But I love it. It's like a pun. It's no Interstellar. It's not Interstellar.
Yes. That's really nerdy humor. So, Elliot, did you have anything different for this category?
I haven't seen too many movies this year, unfortunately. Before it was because I was working so much, and ironically now it's because I am not working at all until I start a new job next month. So my excursions to the theaters haven't been very plentiful. I probably would have picked The Martian, I think, because it has been very popular, and I've heard a lot of good things about it from other people. I trust you guys more than other people, of course, but I did hear that it was very good.
That's right. So to speak to the complete absence of quality dramas this year, I didn't have a rest, really. I had a sort of question mark, which is a movie I want to see but have not yet made time to see, which is a movie called Brooklyn, which is about an Irish girl who moves to the United States and is basically torn between a love of a guy from the old world, the Irish world, and a love of a new guy from the new world who's Italian.
Yeah. Because they really wanted to, you know, make those Irish and Italians love each other some more.
Yes.
Because Felicity from Arrow comes out in it, so I like to see it.
And
it's a very Randian setup, the premise.
I've only seen the trailer and an extended cut, like, scene. And it's tremendous from what I've seen, but it was not so motivating that I had to go see it. This was not like last year where we had, Interstellar and Whiplash and a couple of other really great movies. Like
Birdman. Just kidding.
Go fuck yourself.
I want to see Brooklyn, but I'm afraid that I can't be objective about it. Because I'm going to be like, why wouldn't you pick the Italian guy? I don't understand this movie. This seems like it should be 5 minutes long.
Yes. You know what? Fuck you, bitch. He don't deserve you. Yeah. Anyway, go ahead.
So for rest, I had, and this is a movie I'm surprised you didn't pick, it came out in January, Kingsman: The Secret Service, which is a movie that I finally watched after you convinced me like 80 million times, and I finally went to Redbox and watched it, and it was very good. It had a very good villain. It had a compelling conflict.
So this is where we're going to yell at each other. You ready? You don't have enough categories.
Kingsman's not really a drama, though, is it?
Right. So I put it in the comedy category, even though it's not really a comedy, it's an action film.
Okay, but we can't even fill out the fucking categories that are here, alright? You want to make the fucking categories?
You don't even deserve
these fucking categories.
There's the Italian, I know.
Categories.
Yes. That's it, I'm taking my charms and going home.
So, speaking of which, I think for the next two categories, it's just going to be Daniel talking, because for comedic movie of the year, I can't honestly remember seeing any comedies, and I think Elliot's the same way. And then I only saw one animated movie.
Yeah, wow. The animated one's the one where I'm going to be silent, but I've seen a couple of comedies.
Okay, so you guys go for comedies. Elliot, you go first now.
Okay. For comedy, and I know that this might be controversial, I think the best meaning popular good was probably the movie Spy with Melissa McCarthy, Jude Law. I thought it was hysterically funny the whole time. And I don't usually like Melissa McCarthy in a lot of things, but I really liked her here. I thought the movie was so hysterically funny. And I think it was extremely popular when it came out, and then it just kind of faded away. And then my rest was Kingsman: The Secret Service. Because as good as it was, I feel like it never really got the attention that it should have. I mean, for goodness sakes, Obama's head blows off his shoulders. I mean, glorious.
That's probably why it didn't get the attention.
Now coming after me like, No, but I mean, it was his, that was a great movie. Like the fact that their heads are exploding and instead of blood, it's like all these multicolored things set to music. I mean, it's hysterical and I loved it. I thought it was great. That action scene in the church. Can we talk about that for a minute?
That was a fantastic action scene, by the way. One of the, clearly the best action scene of the year, in my opinion.
Joss Whedon just died a little more on the inside.
He that's
him
right.
More angst to write from.
Yeah, you don't deserve the award, Joss. Okay, I'm not Italian. I can't do it. But, I had a little trouble placing the movies exactly in best or rest here because of mainstream versus not versus underrated versus many factors. But here we go. So for the best movie of the year, I had a tie for in comedy between Kingsman and a movie that was mainstream but sort of bombed at the box office for a reason, which was The Man from U.N.C.L.E. And I was really skeptical because this was a remake, and I fucking hate remakes. But Fiza came home so excited about this movie that she bought it, and so I decided to watch it, and it's really good. It's a great action movie that has a lot of comedic moments. I thought the acting was excellent. Armie Hammer, who apparently has the most underrated acting career of all time, because also The Lone Ranger was a very good movie that got panned at the box office and didn't do very well.
Yes.
Henry Cavill.
And Superman was in it, and he was also very good. So
I conceptualize both of those movies similarly, actually, where I look at them and like the talent that's involved with it and the premise really makes me want to see it. But I just never got around to seeing it, and it wasn't generally hyped enough to make me want to see it. But everyone I know that I trusted and value their opinion enjoyed it.
Yeah, so I don't know. I thought it was a very good movie. Certainly, in a year of shitty movies, it's certainly good enough to win Best Comedy, tied with Kingsman.
Yeah,
so,
it's really depressing year for movies, isn't it?
It was a horrible, horrible year for cinema.
Which is ironic, because it's making all this fucking money. I mean, Fast and the Furious 7, Jurassic World... I mean, we'll get to that in a second.
Yes, indeed. So, by the way, Elliot, I don't think Spy is that controversial. It was probably top five for me comedies that I saw this year. Again, horrible year for movies, but it wasn't cringeworthy bad.
Well, for a comedy, I mean, as long as it makes, for me, it needs to make me laugh, and I have to like the characters, and for me, it hit those two criteria. I don't usually go to comedies for the deeper philosophical insights that I would go to like a Nolan film or a Snyder film.
Yeah, so. And don't tell Adam Carolla, but his movie came out this year and it was not that good.
Road Hard?
Yeah, not that good.
Was that a fictional movie? I'm confused.
Yes, Road Hard is a fictional movie about a comedian who has to go back on the road after having a successful TV career.
Oh, okay.
And it's just not good. It's not good. His documentary about Paul Newman was awesome. Fucking fantastic, in fact, but there's no documentary category, so...
Is that on Amazon yet, by the way? No, it is. I'm just kidding.
I don't know.
I just called back to a joke, not on our show.
Oh, thanks. Thanks for promoting other people's fucking work, douche. You don't deserve to be on the show. Okay. And then the rest, I picked this movie not because it wasn't mainstream. Well, it was mainstream, but I picked it because it was incredibly, incredibly underrated, in my opinion, which was Ted 2. Are you shocked, audience? You should be shocked, because you need to go watch the fucking movie right now and reevaluate your life.
I mean, we really shouldn't be. It has two of the greatest human beings on the planet Earth in it, Mark Wahlberg and Tom Brady.
Tom Brady? Yeah.
And the Tom... You're going to see, like, Amanda Seyfried or something.
Nope. I mean, there was a little... The reason it didn't get best is because there's a little bit too much stoner humor in it for me, personally. But I could get past it because it was so witty. And so well written. I think most people didn't like it because they didn't get it. There are so many references in this because it's fucking Seth MacFarlane, but some of them are so obscure, and or at least you would have to know comedies. Like, there's an entire scene with Ted driving the car, which is basically a shot-for-shot remake of a scene of John Candy driving a car in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Who the fuck is going to get that?
Yeah, nobody.
Only no us. One. I saw it, laughed hysterically.
Better or worse than Ted 2, or Ted 1?
Worse than Ted 1, but still way underrated for what it was.
Yeah.
And the scenes with Tom Brady were priceless. So.
Oh, more than one scene, huh?
Well, it's like an extended... Like, it's not just, like, one quick thing. Like, it's a minor, major plot point.
Oh, I thought it was the whole thing they did in the trailer. There's more to it?
Well, yeah. Like, he has to pretend to be an air conditioning repairman in order to get access to his house. And
oh, okay. Then I'll probably see this now. The thing I remember about the original Ted was there was so much stuff I laughed at that it was very Boston humor that nobody really got, and everyone thought I was crazy. But they were just, like, they were making fun of Boston pretty hardcore.
Yes. And who else but Ted or Seth MacFarlane, who's now wildly successful, would have their opening credits be set to a musical number with incredible production value done in like the 1940s tap dancing / you know, opening a giant mirror and there are swimmers in it style that has nothing to do with the rest of the movie?
Well, that just continues what I've said, that Ted was basically Family Guy. This sounds like Family Guy again. I mean, that's like the opening to Family Guy, so.
Yeah. All right, let's move along here.
Animated.
It's all you.
I only saw Inside Out, which I refused to give an award.
Good. I did not give it an award. It was not good enough to receive an award. You know what? For the first time ever, I did not see a Pixar movie in theaters, which was The Good Dinosaur.
Yeah.
I heard horrible, horrible things about The Good Dinosaur, and I just could not fit it into my schedule. So I haven't seen it yet, so I don't know where it ranks. But in my opinion, the best animated movie, and again, in a year of animated movies that were fairly shit, was Minions, which is the prequel to Despicable Me, and was funny and cute in its own right, and I don't know, it was sort of blah in terms of message, because there was no message. But it was beautiful animation and funny, and the little Minion characters are kooky. So,
not the Alvin Chipmunk's fourth movie?
Nope. Road Chip, or whatever the fuck that was.
Yeah, I was going to say Road Chip, but that's a bizarre name.
Nobody saw it.
16 people saw it a bunch so it could compete with Star Wars. And then the rest is a movie that got wildly panned, which I thought was not so horrible, which was the movie Home. Which is about a group of aliens who invade Earth, and it's the lead alien is Jim Parsons from The Big Bang Theory.
Typecasting.
Yes, indeed. So I thought it was cute. There are fun moments. The twist at the end was sort of worth it, worth the price of admission. By the way, I cannot remember a worse year for animated movies.
Well, can't remember a worse year for movies, I think.
Not a long time. This was just a shit year for movies, except for...
Well,
the next category is winner.
The next category is Franchise Movie of the Year, and I think we're all going to agree on the Franchise Movie of the Year.
It has to be, right? It has to be Road Chip?
Yeah. Yes. Although I do have a similarly surprising movie for the rest, so we'll tease that for a second. I'll go last with my rest. But I had for best Star Wars The Force Awakens... it's gonna break all the box office records. It's gonna make more money than Avatar made. And, controversial, I think it's the best Star Wars movie. I know the internet's starting to turn on it now and be like, it's just the same thing as A New Hope. But we talked about that extensively. Go back and listen to our Star Wars episode if you want to hear our opinion on why that's an off-base critique.
I heard that it was very heated.
That's not serious Star Wars fans. So the only critique that serious Star Wars fans have of this is that it's not the expanded universe, which fine, whatever. But those are sort of bandwagon Star Wars fans who have that critique and they can go fuck themselves.
Yeah.
So Star Wars, clearly the best franchise movie of the year.
Agree or disagree, Elliot?
I think my My favorite of Star Wars movies is probably still going to be The Empire Strikes Back.
Right, but do you agree that Force Awakens is... I'm the only crazy one who thinks it's the best Star Wars movie.
Yes.
Do you think it's the best franchise movie of the year?
I do. I think it is the best franchise movie. I don't think that there's any question about that. And we've had a few franchises this year.
Yeah.
But what was your reps?
Well, I'll do that last. Tell me your guys' rest first.
Okay, well, my problem is I thought most of the rest of the franchise movies this year blew goats.
Yes, which is why I picked a surprising one.
Jurassic World?
No, I picked it based upon box office performance.
Mine was Mission Impossible Rogue Nation.
That's a good pick.
I think that's probably the best pick. Yeah.
It is a good movie, and it has very strong themes of friendship, and it focuses on friendship between men, which a lot of films don't really do, at least not in any significant way. And there are great action scenes with a lot of verisimilitude, but it's not naturalistic. So even though he's actually hanging on the side of the plane, you know, in the opening sequence, it's not a naturalistic technique. They do it precisely to enhance the theme and enhance the story. I thought it was a very strong movie. It was written by Christopher McQuarrie, the guy that wrote The Usual Suspects. And it was a really strong film. I'm actually surprised that it didn't stick around longer. But I guess it was such a competitive summer that you really couldn't.
It did well. I think it made good money. So it was hard to hype it. That's all.
You know, focusing on friendship between men, that wouldn't pass that fucking Bo Bergdahl test or whatever it is.
The Bergdahl test?
Yeah.
That's a load of crap. Anyway.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, if fucking Mad Max, which by the way, we're not giving awards, passes the Bechdel test, you know there's something wrong with that fucking test. As if those women were well-drawn characters.
Yeah, anyway, by the way, and people who aren't familiar, the Bechdel test is some fucking feminist nonsense about...
Just fucking Google it.
Judging how good women's roles are in movies or whatever.
It says if women... talk about if there are two women talking about something other than men, it passes the Bechdel test.
Okay,
so my rest, Paul Blart Mall Cop 2. And the reason I say this is it made $107 million worldwide on a budget of 30 with everyone talking shit about it. So you know what? I tip my hat to Kevin James in that movie.
That man has always found a way to make money.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So I gotta give him some cred.
Was that Zoo Cop or whatever, Zookeeper movie he made that made a gazillion dollars?
Wasn't that We Bought a Zoo?
No, that was the Matt Damon piece of shit.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Oh.
No, this one he like fought a gorilla or some shit.
All right, let's move on to television now.
Yay.
Dramatic television show of the year. I'm interested in what you guys have.
Let's start with Elliot, because I assume Justin and I have the same show, but...
Okay. Elliot.
All right. Well, for me, dramatic series, and I will forever be tooting the horn of this show until you guys actually give it a chance.
No.
Person of Interest.
Who was going to say that?
I know. It was extraordinary. It's created by Jonathan Nolan, who's the brother of Christopher Nolan. And it deals with, the theme of it is the relationship of human beings to technology, and more specifically, the relationship of a creator with its creation when there's actually an ability to have something of a relationship, artificial intelligences and things like that. And I think the last season, the one that ended this past spring, really brought it to a head. And it was absolutely surprisingly moving. And it was so insanely good. And it's one of those shows that people really don't, it was almost my rest because it's not a show that gets brought up to the extent that Game of Thrones or The Walking Dead will get brought up. But I will forever ring its bell because I think that it started out strong and it's just gotten so much better. And I wish that people would give it a chance and marathon it.
Nope. Love you, Elliot, but nope. Couldn't get past the pilot.
I concur.
Anyway, we love you even though you're different.
What's your rest, Elliot?
My rest is a show that is based on a movie that came out a couple of years ago with Bradley Cooper. It's called Limitless. I've really enjoyed it thus far. It's only in the middle of its first season. It's actually got a lot of comic elements to it too, but it has very poignant moments. It's a show really about a guy who he takes this pill and it makes him one of the smartest people in the world, like the smartest man in the world. And it's really fun to watch somebody not only discover intelligence, but who enjoys it. You know, he enjoys being smart and he discovers a lot about himself and there's a show that places a lot of value on intelligence and how great a person can be when they're allowed to flex their mental muscles, you know. I really enjoy it a lot, but it's only halfway through the first season. We'll see how it ends.
You just enjoy those procedurals.
That was a theme of 2015, by the way, right there. That's a theme right there. So my best was, I think, it has to be, even though I think this final season was not as strong as previous seasons, it's still, to me, the best show on television, because it's the most romantic show on television, which has to be Hannibal.
I agree. Did you finish the third season?
Not yet. I'm getting through it, though, very slowly, because I missed a little bit, I think, of the earlier, so I had to go back and rewatch a bit.
Yeah, the second half of the season really... really pays off and is really, really well done. And the crescendo for all of it, the final episode and the way it's done, even though Brian Fuller has said that the show could continue, it's really a perfect ending for the series.
Okay. Well, I am looking forward to finishing it. The first half is just gorgeous, even though it's a little slow for my taste comparatively to the rest of the show. I still think it is clearly, from everything I've seen, the most romantic show on TV and thus the best.
And I look forward to you texting me when you watch that final scene and say, yeah, you were right. It's the perfect ending.
You just live for my validation of your rightness.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Nobody else will validate it. Things I learned in 2015, hashtag.
And my rest, this I think is going to be different from all of you because I don't even think any of you watch this show. That's right.
Transparent.
Found a show. No, fuck you. How dare you assault me? How dare you, sir, think I would watch that Amazon show? No, it's in fact an FX show, and it is The Americans. I started watching this show partially sort of randomly. I accidentally clicked on it as I was trying to watch something else, and I was like, I'll watch the first episode, and I really liked it. And so I've sort of been binge-watching it, and it's quite good. It's quite good. It's very well written, and the plot is intricate without being burdensome, which I think is difficult to do. Usually when plots are intricate, sort of like Game of Thrones, it's just like, how many fucking characters do we have to introduce? And this show is not like that. So, by the way, the show, in case anyone doesn't know, it's about, it's set during the Cold War, height of the Cold War, Reagan era, Soviets, living deep undercover in the United States as Americans, but acting as spies for the Soviets. So the one thing I'll say about the show is that you mentioned earlier Man in the High Castle sort of making you root for the Nazi at one point. I think the show
for Hitler specifically.
Hitler specifically.
I was like, don't shoot Hitler, please. I was actually thinking that, and I was like, what's wrong with me?
I know. This show makes you root just a little bit too much for the Soviets. But I think the writing is cool and the plot is cool. So, Justin, do you have an interesting rest?
For rest, I had to give respect to Mad Men. That show also ended, and it had a very good last season. And it's never been insanely popular, even though it was very hyped critically. And I think the last season kind of disappeared a little from the public eye. So I just had to tip my hat to Mad Men for a great series that was also too slow for Daniel's taste.
And mine.
Yes. Such slow-paced intrigue. What is this, an episode of Mad Men?
Okay, that's one of the best lines I've ever written, even though the actress bungled it.
Yes, that came from an original by Justin in a short called End It Like Beckham.
No, that was in Brobita.
That was in Brobita?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Anyway, you should... If someday we'll get those both online and you can share them, much like Matt Stone and Jay Parker share Cannibal the Musical.
Yeah, and so we'll also have, with Brobita, a track of me watching Brobita, because that's probably more entertaining than Brobita itself.
Justin is the only human being on the planet who will laugh at every single second of Brobita. It's like the moment the camera starts and the music chord hits, he just starts busting out laughing.
I'm laughing now. Like, I don't know, the laugh that cracks me up. Like, I don't laugh harder at anything other than that.
Yes. Maybe you are a narcissist.
It's not that. It's the complete opposite. It's such a train wreck, and I know why, and I'm laughing at the fact that it's a train wreck.
Yes, so that's really insider baseball for all y'all. But so let's move on for best TV comedy.
Right.
Justin, you start this one.
Yeah, oh. Well, I have a question before I start this one. It's okay. Going to change my answer. Did Man Seeking Woman come out in 2015?
I thought that was going to be your answer, but I don't know the answer to that. Let me consult the internets while you give us your...
I'll give you my rest while we do that, because if it did come out in 2015, that's my best. But my rest for comedic television show is Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I think this isn't much of a surprise for people because I was very supportive of Andre Brower when he was nominated for the Emmy for Best Supporting Actor. His role is hilarious as Captain Holt. Every character is consistently hilarious every week. And I don't think a lot of people watch this show or know about it. I don't hear a lot of hype about it. But to me, it's hysterical. I love it.
So Man Seeking Woman made it just under the the time crunch. January 14th, 2015 was its first episode.
Okay, then yes, I would say that is the best comedy of 2015.
I think you should give that one a tiny explainer because I don't think many people know about that one either.
Man Seeking Woman is a show on FXX, which is probably why no one knows about it. It's starring Jay Baruchel, who's part of the whole Seth Rogen, Judd Apatow collective.
Also the voice of Hiccup in the How to Train Your Dragon series.
Yes, so he has had a successful career. Also, Nicolas Cage's apprentice in the movie The Sorcerer's Apprentice.
Jesus Christ, what a pull. What a pull that is.
And it's about him trying to date after he breaks up with his girlfriend. And to me, it's the ideal form of romanticized comedy because it takes him and it takes real situations he's in that guys who are going through what he's going through go through, except it exaggerates the things that are absurd about it. Like, he goes on a blind date and he ends up on a blind date with an ugly girl, except he's actually on a blind date with a real troll.
Like and he's trying actual not, troll.
Right.
Yes.
And he's trying not to offend her or anything, and everyone's just getting mad at him for getting upset that he's on a date with a troll who's abusing him. And we've talked a lot about men's rights and the way, you know, men are kind of shit on in dating, and I think that episode encapsulates it very well. That scene encapsulates that very well. Or when his ex-girlfriend starts dating a new guy and she's dating Hitler.
Yes. By the way, a literal reincarnation of Hitler.
Right, and that's a perfect way of doing it. And the way they do it is, what I've always said is, I think it would be really funny to take a dramatic show or movie, write it, and then go back and do another pass, but just exaggerate certain things in it to make it comedic. And that's essentially what this show is. Or, Daniel, are you finished with the show yet?
Nope. Too much watching. Not finished yet.
So you haven't seen the penis monster? Tanaka.
No.
Tanaka.
No.
Hell?
But now Elliot's intrigued. Penis monster.
No, yes. I'm afraid.
So yeah, it's a good show. I agree. It's not in my top two, but it's a good show. People should watch it. Elliot, you want to go?
I've given up on sitcoms and comedy shows. I haven't watched a lot of them.
Tanaka.
Yeah, that I have would be, let's see. I put Muppets only because I don't watch a lot of comedies anymore. I used to love shows like The Big Bang Theory, and then they just got stupid, and I just can't stand them anymore.
Yes, they did.
But I really, really liked this recent season of Archer. I mean, Archer as a dad, you know, the father of a baby, having to babysit. I mean, it was so, so funny watching him in these different situations and having the baby, like, when they're infiltrating, like, a gang or a cartel, and it's just, oh, it was just hysterically funny. But I think those are the two really the only two comedies that I really watched this year.
Yeah, so I think comedy was a strong category this year in TV and you could probably switch my two best and rest in categories. Yeah, but I mean, there were really strong performances. You know, things like The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, which I thought was funny, and Difficult People, and
Tanaka.
Was the no, shut up, penis, shut up. But Fresh Off the Boat, which I think was less funny than last year, but still pretty funny. So I'm gonna go with my rest first, which is actually the more high profile of the two, which is The Grinder. I think the writing in The Grinder just tickles me pink every week, and a premise that I thought was going to be completely retarded ended up being excellent.
Yeah, and I really love The Grinder as well. I almost included it, especially because Rob Lowe is tremendous in it.
Yes, Rob Lowe, all hail Rob Lowe, and the Wonder Years kid, whose name I can never remember, Fred Savage. Yes, thank you, gotcha. It's also very good.
Also watch Ben Savage on Girl Meets World, thank you.
Uh-huh. So, but in fact, the best TV comedy of the year, I can't even believe I'm nominated this, but it was absolutely unequivocally Gallivant.
I completely forgot.
Which was basically a short season comedy musical.
And it's coming back.
Oh, it is coming back. I didn't know it was coming back.
It's coming back next month.
That's fantastic. Gallivant was outstanding from beginning to end in terms of writing, acting, and performing. Singing, I mean.
Oh, man, I completely forgot about that.
You have not watched Gallivant. It is, yes. I am the guy on the show who constantly harps about there's nothing fucking new on television anymore. Gallivant is very creative and very good. So if you have not watched it, you should go treat yourself to the full season of Gallivant on Hulu.
All right, I'm changing my answer. Forget the Muppets. Gallivant was the best. Forget Muppets.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, we say there were no movies, but there was a glut of television this year.
Yes.
And I think we'll see that in the next category, too. The science fiction / fantasy show of the year. I think there was a lot to pick from.
Oh, yes.
I think so. I'll go first because mine will be boring-ish. So I changed my answer late in the game because I didn't know fantasy was included in this category. I thought it was just sci-fi, and I thought, oh,
the line is so thin between sci-fi and fantasy. I mean, Star Wars, fantasy.
Yeah, right, exactly. So I think the best this year was Daredevil. Just all around quality, much better than expected. Probably the best thing. This is Marvel, right? Probably the best thing Marvel has done in a long time.
Besides Iron Man, yes.
Yeah, in a long time.
Yeah. I had it as well. I would say the one knock on Daredevil is just its subtle assumed demonization of capitalism.
A little bit in there. Social justice-y.
Right. It favored the social justice warrior Matt Murdock over the capitalist Wilson Fisk. Yes.
Elliot,
still
did
not
you have
as
a...
bad as Jessica Jones.
Nothing will ever be as bad as the eye rape that is Jessica Jones.
Which is ironic.
Yes. I forgot about the rest. So the rest is a show that got some critical acclaim, but I haven't heard much about it otherwise, which is The Man in the High Castle. Very well written, much better than the book on which it's based by Philip K. Dick.
But to be fair, it only becomes science fiction in like the last scene.
Hey! Spoilers? That's not really spoilers, but...
Because I was excited. I was like, I watched the whole thing and like pushed through a lot of it because I wanted to see the last episode and see what the reveal was because you said there was an interesting thing about it. And then I got to the last scene and I was like, that was it. The thing I predicted when I heard the premise is what the final scene was.
To be fair, there are fantastical elements throughout that sort of make you go, something is up here. And it's not like, when you say it's based on a Philip K. Dick novel, it's not like someone goes, oh, so it's a romance? Like, we all know what Philip K. Dick wrote.
It's a romance. It was very We the Living with the
Philip
triangle.
K. Dick did not write romance, is my point.
But it was very We the Living, where she was like, I'm in love with the Jew, but I'm also in love with the Nazi, and I'm trying to get free from my oppressive home world. I was like, is this based on Philip K. Dick or Ayn Rand?
Yes, but my point is, okay, fuck you. Just let's move on.
All right, so my rest is The Flash. It doesn't get great ratings because it's on the CW, but it's one of the best rated, if not the best rated, show on the CW. And it's a very good superhero show. It's very nerdy, and it's very science fiction with time travel.
Time travel!
Yes. So that was your rest? Because I picked that as my best.
Well, wow. I picked it based on popularity. I mean, if you look at Daredevil, Daredevil's a better show than The Flash, and it's also much more popular in the general culture.
I don't know. I mean, I picked The Flash as my best because I think Daredevil, as great as Daredevil was, there's some parts that were... I wasn't particularly crazy about it. I think sometimes it got a little too carried away with some of the goriness. Like when he gets his head, when the guy gets his head lopped off by the car door because Fisk beats his head off. But, so, I don't know. I like The Flash. I think it's just more suited to me, my sense of life. My Rest is a show that, a lot of people are starting to discover, but it's not that popular yet. I've talked about it on this show before. It's called The Librarians. It's on TNT on Sunday nights. It's an action-adventure show. You know, it's a little bit Indiana Jones, a little bit Warehouse 13, very similar. Very benevolent, very good guys, you know, always win kind of thing. I really enjoy it a lot. So I'm putting that out there. And it doesn't get a lot of attention, but it is a very good show.
It is one that I think I probably do want to watch at least one episode of.
All right. So let's move on now to the talent behind these shows rather than the shows themselves. So let's real quick here, let's just run down actor, actress, director, and writer. So let's start with actor. Who did you guys have for best and rest?
Let's start with Elliot, because I think ours are going to be the same for best.
I put Samuel L. Jackson for actor, because he's done a lot this year between The Hateful Eight, between Kingsman, and a few other films. I think he's just been a very solid presence. And I think he always does a really great job when he's on screen. And my rest, and this will be a controversial pick again, I'm putting Stephen Amell.
Who?
Stephen Amell, he plays the Green Arrow.
He actually learned how to act.
He's learned, not only learned, but he's become, his presence on screen has become really, really strong. And not just because he looks great, which he does, but I think that he has just become to embody the character so well that when you see him on screen, you really can't look away from him. Like, he really does carry himself as the leader of this group. It's fantastic. So I'm putting him down.
By the way, there's a joke about Sam Jackson in Ted 2 that I enjoyed, which was the female character's name is Samantha Jackson, and they're like, wait, what's your middle name? She's like, Lorraine. Wait, so your name is Sam L. Jackson? And she has no idea who that is. And they're like, how can you not know Sam L. Jackson? She goes, I don't know. She goes, have you ever seen a movie ever? He's the black guy.
That's a good bit. That's like a bit I would write.
I thought it was a great joke. Sam Jackson, I forgot. His strong performance in Kingsman.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
But my actor best, hands down for me, not surprise, would be Mads Mikkelsen.
Hannibal.
So I thought his performance is just general. I was so skeptical because when you take a character as iconic as Hannibal Lecter, played by one of the most iconic, talented actors in history, Sir Anthony
Hopkins.
Thank you. I was going to say Daniels, but that's C-3PO. Anthony Hopkins, and you have a new guy play it in a completely different way, there's immediate skepticism. But he has just played the hell out of that part.
So I had him as rest because of how poorly the show did in the ratings. So I don't think people saw the performance. But I agree with you, because Hopkins' performance was so iconic, but it was always over the top to me. I think Mads Mikkelsen does a better job of portraying evil and portraying the manipulative nature of evil, because there's a veneer of rationality to him, and you can see why he's seductive to Will Graham, and you want to like him.
True, you do want to like him very hard.
Because he's so well put together, and he takes care of himself, and he's intelligent. It's like, I want to like you, but you kill people and eat them.
Yes, I want to like you, but not coming to your house parties.
So who did you have for rest, and then I'll say who I had for best.
So for my rest, I had Henry Cavill from The Man from U.N.C.L.E. Again, underrated performance because no one saw the movie because the critics told them it sucked when it in fact didn't. He plays a really cool American spy in a very retro kind of 60s way. And he's perfect. And he's funny. Not to mention fucking handsome. So.
Yeah.
I think he was underrated in Man of Steel as well, and I think he will be underrated in Batman vs. Superman. I don't think people understand the subtlety he's putting into his performance.
Yeah, he's quite good.
So it's interesting. I think you're going to be shocked by my best, and I'm actually surprised you didn't suggest this. But I thought the best performance of the year was Harrison Ford in The Force Awakens.
Wow.
I thought he carried that movie, and I thought that's the best I've seen him act in years. So
it was
quite
good.
The biggest blockbuster of all time, biggest blockbuster of the year, and the actor who carried the movie and whose character was the center of the movie, I have to give it to him.
I mean, it was a good performance. I just think maybe it was third, fourth best performance of the year, but overall, he did well. I liked some other characters' performance better, as we'll see momentarily, but...
Okay, so let's do Actress of the Year.
You didn't have a rest?
I already told us. I already said it.
Oh, right. Gotcha. Forgot. Yeah, okay. Best Actress, in my opinion, Daisy Ridley, Star Wars. Not only was just her performance outstanding, in my opinion, but again, thinking about the context of a new movie, a new main character, and people have fallen in love with her. Like, she might be the most beloved character now, even though BB-8 is still pretty high up there. But just unbelievably good. Because she's kicks ass, she's empathetic, she's hilarious, and she's not bad on the eyes.
I was going to say she's bangable.
Yeah. We had to look up that she wasn't like 16 or something, and she's not. She's well into 25. Her early 20s.
25. Mid-20s. 25.
No.
Yeah. We're all good. This is not a Disney Channel incident.
Yes, we will not be reporting you like Puck from fucking Glee.
Oh, goodness. I can't believe it.
Yo, when they said that he had child porn on his computers, I was like, well, he probably just has 14-year-old, 15-year-old fans that he's talking to on Twitter. And then I read the article and it was like significantly lower than 14 to 15.
Oh, yikes.
Yeah, exactly.
His old girlfriend turned him in too.
Wow.
She found this on the computer and she called the police and turned him in.
Ouch. So, my rest was from Fresh Off the Boat, and that would be Constance Wu, who plays the mother on Fresh Off the Boat. Fucking unbelievably, not only hysterical, but caring and sort of assertive. And if you can beat those three things simultaneously, you are doing something really right.
Yes.
And she carries that show. So. Just such a great actress.
Elliot?
For my best, I went with Daisy Ridley as well. For all the reasons you listed, except for the bangable, because, you know, for me, bangable is Oscar Isaac, who played Bo. So.
Blue. You love yourself some blue.
But for my rest, a show that you guys don't watch anymore for, you know, good reasons. But they've had a very good season so far, is Ming Na Wen from Agents of Justice, plays Melinda May.
Can't blame you there.
She has had a really difficult challenge this year because she's had to play her a little bit in a more personal way than we've ever seen her. She's usually a character that keeps things close to the vest, and I think this year a lot of her personal stuff has come out, and she's had to, in one scene, I don't know if you guys have been watching at all, but she's had to take control of S.H.I.E.L.D. for a bit, and she's had to kind of run things, and she's had to keep her eye on the ball, when she's actually got emotional investments through her husband, who we met last season, and other things that have come up, and she's played it brilliantly, and I think that she's really underrated as an actress. I think people know her as a stunt performer, but I really am looking forward to people kind of discovering her as a true actress who can really put her all into a character.
So far, 2 for 2 in Asian women in the rest category. Justin, can you keep it rolling?
Ironically, no. You would think I would be the one to keep it going, but.
Yeah.
No, for best, I had Elizabeth Moss for her role as Peggy on Mad Men. I think she deserves the tip of the cap for how well she did over the entire series and how well she closed it out.
Deserves a tip of something.
Well, yes, that's true. And then I have one that I'm surprised you didn't pick, Daniel, for rest.
Mm.
I picked Alexa Davalos for The Man in the High Castle because she carried that show, and any other actress could have botched that up, but she made it incredibly endearing.
She was quite good, and someone I was very skeptical of in the first episode. So I thought, this isn't going to work, but it works. It works.
I will forever hear her voice say, "I'm sorry, Frank."
Oh.
I will forever hear it. That whenever I hear that phrase, it will always be in her voice.
Yes.
All right, Director of the Year, go.
J.J. Abrams, hands down.
I agree. Have to give it to J.J. Elliot?
Yeah, J.J. for best.
All right. Rest of the year.
I have Michael Reimer, who directed most of the episodes of Hannibal. I thought the directing was quite good in that, in this, especially in the third series, which I thought was slow. It was slower to put more emphasis on the scene setup and the directing. So.
Yeah, they definitely went more visual in season three.
Yeah.
For rest, I had Matthew Vaughn for Kingsman. I think he's very underrated as a director. I think if you look at his catalog, it's very good. He's been coming on recently, and I think Kingsman was a triumph on his part.
Strong pick. Some phenomenal directing. Yeah.
Elliot?
Christopher McQuarrie from Mission Impossible. I think it was just a really, really strong film, and he's brilliant at really making you feel as if you're with Tom Cruise or the other characters. There's a scene in that movie that sticks out of my mind where he has to be underwater for a long time in order to solve a particular problem. And there's the danger of him running out of breath. And I'm not kidding you. When you watch that film, especially because I saw it in theaters, and it's one of the few films I got to see on a big screen, you find yourself holding your breath with him because it's so captivating and so engaging and terrifying and exciting, and he's really, really good, Christopher McQuarrie, at bringing those things out and creating a relationship between the audience and the film.
Fair enough.
Writer of the year.
Brian Fuller, Hannibal.
I had Brian Fuller as well. Elliot, what did you have for best?
I put Jonathan Nolan, Person of Interest.
Of course you did.
What'd you have for rest?
At the risk of getting picked on a little bit, I picked Greg Berlanti.
I would put him above Jonathan Nolan, to be honest with you.
You're not going to get picked on. That's not a horrible choice.
Greg Berlanti is very underrated.
Yeah. For rest, I had Frank Spotnitz for The Man in the High Castle.
Wow.
Again, when you take a Philip K. Dick novel and make it way better, well done, sir. Well done.
So. I also had Frank Spotnitz, but the one...
Two for two!
The one caveat I would put in here is I specifically gave it to him for episode 2 of The Man in the High Castle, where, look, you don't have to watch the entire series. Just watch that episode. That episode is perfectly integrated. It hits on all cylinders. It's one of the best episodes of television in the past year. It's spectacularly written.
Fuller Spotsnitz 2016.
I would vote for that over everyone else. All right, so let's do a couple other categories here. You know, we're moving away from television. We're moving away from visual media. Let's hit up real quick. Everyone just give Musician of the Year and Comedian of the Year, your best and rest.
Musician, I went not with the person who plays, but with the person who plays the orchestra for both of these. Which best Musician of the Year to me is John Williams, writing the music for Star Wars. Basically anything John Williams writes is aural gold, but in particular, again, creating new themes and expanding on existing themes, he just did a masterful job of his craft this year at Star Wars. So my rest was Michael Giacchino for Inside Out. The only thing about that movie that deserves recognition is the music.
Elliot?
For me, Musician of the Year, obviously it has to be Adele. I adore her. I was so looking forward to seeing to the new music coming out. I've waited.
Okay.
I'm telling you.
Before you say that, I surprisingly agree with Elliot.
Gay. Double gay.
Now, I'm not an Adele fan personally. I don't really like her music, but her talent and craftsmanship, and again, like I did with Paul Blart Mall Cop 2. No, this is not a fat comparison. Fuck you, listeners. You have to give respect for her sales. The way her album is selling in this day and age is incredible.
I give her props for being a genuinely talented singer nowadays. So don't worry. It is the gayest possible response. That's all I'm saying.
I don't listen to Adele. I just respect her. What do you have for rest, Elliot?
I have Pentatonix, the a cappella group. I think they've had a really amazing year. They're still kind of being discovered, but they're getting a lot of play now on social media. They're starting to step out into the mainstream. I think that they're extraordinarily talented. I love a cappella, and I think that they're going to start taking off even more than they have been.
Swingle singers forever and always.
And I'm going to redeem my manhood with my answer for rest. My musician of the year is the pop punk band Neck Deep for their album Life's Not Out to Get You. I think it's the pop punk album of the year. I think it will go down as one of the best pop punk albums ever released. I wasn't a big fan of their first album, so when this album got hype, I didn't listen to it. I kind of dragged my feet on it. But I started listening to it, and I haven't been able to stop listening to it. Every song sounds pop punk, but it sounds a little different. And it also hits all the major themes of pop punk. You know, the importance of friends, the importance of passion, of individualism, of where you come from, difficulty with relationships. All of it's in there, and it does it in a memorable and unique way. So I gotta give respect to Neck Deep for Life's Not Out to Get You.
But your best was Adele?
I'm giving her respect as a mainstream artist, and who's been able to, you know, she's talented and she's able to sell.
And she's bangable. Just kidding.
Yeah, no.
Okay.
All right. So comedian of the year.
So is there any guess as to what my comedian of the year is? It's the man I quote in every single episode.
I didn't pick a single freaking one. So it's all on you, man.
All right.
Yeah. Well, mine was very clearly and for good reason, Adam Carolla. Specifically for his podcast, but if for no other reason than he gave me one of my favorite phrases of all time, which is when people do that fucking annoying thing of, oh, I tried, I did my best, I can say to them, don't do your best, do my best.
It's a very Adam Carolla thing to say.
Yes. His New Year's resolution was everyone else needs to get their shit together. That was his New Year's resolution. In February, someone you don't hear a lot from anymore released a comedy special that is so unique and interesting that I had to immediately watch it. It's called Unconstitutional, and it's basically an hour and a half of jokes about the Constitution. That sounds horribly trite and boring. Mm. It is fucking brilliant. And it's Colin Quinn making a comeback this year. It's an outstanding comedic special. He goes through every single line and amendment of the Constitution. That's right. Quite good.
Well, I'm gonna have to watch that.
Yeah.
All right.
Quite good.
Well, for my best, I can't ever not pick him. Bill Burr.
Bill fucking Burr!
For his podcast, MeUndies, MeUndies. somebody took his songs, like the MeUndies song that he advertises, and also apparently he did like Christmas carols on one episode where he just was like, just making new versions of Christmas carols. And if you go on YouTube, somebody put music under those. So that just right there doesn't just prove to you his brilliance. I don't know what it is. I actually listen to his ads. That's how funny he is.
I love his nuts.com commercials too. Yes. Quite good.
And then for rest.
But he's not liked by all the ladies. Sorry. You have to listen to his podcast in order to get any of these jokes. So I'm sure our audience right now is just glazed over with boredom. But
so for rest, I had Ron Funches. And the reason I had Ron Funches is he was a triple threat this year. He was dominant on At Midnight to the point that they had a Bunches of Funches week. He is a star on the show Undateable, NBC's live sitcom, and he also released his first album, which has some really good stuff on it. It's not a great album, but it's a good album. So if you take all of those together, he's a rising star of comedy, and he's a very funny guy.
Is he our only black guy on the list?
No, Samuel Jackson.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. He doesn't count.
All right, so let's move on to the group awards. What we did for the group awards this year was we solicited nominations and votes from a panel of six. The six people are the three of us, as well as guests and co-hosts you've seen before or heard before, William, James, and Katrina. Let's go from the top here. I'll remind you who won last year, and then we'll talk about who won this year. So we have the Narcissist of the Year Award. 2014, that was Jonathan Gruber. Daniel, do you want to remind us why Jonathan Gruber was the Narcissist of the Year?
Jonathan Gruber was one of the architects of Obamacare, who went on shows basically before it was passed and selling it as, this is something where unless the state signs up, they don't get supplements for their exchanges. And then when it was under attack in the Supreme Court for that exact thing, he said, that's never what we wrote. That's never what we meant. And he lied his ass off multiple times and got called out multiple times and still continued to lie because he thinks he can't be caught.
Narcissist. All right.
Complete.
And the Narcissist of the Year Award, this is one of the war awards that was a runaway. I think it might have been a unanimous vote.
It was a unanimous vote, but I would like to say that some of the nominees this year were quite good. Before we announce the winner, I'll say that I in particular nominated Hillary Clinton, even though I didn't vote for her. I think it is incredibly narcissistic to think that your vagina entitles you to someone's vote.
I nominated Caitlyn Jenner.
It's true. It's true. But it was, in fact, Elliot's nominee who won this year.
Yes, and the winner is Elliot?
Trump.
Yes. He's huge!
He's huge. The classiest, the most huge person, the most, the hugest narcissist in the world.
Right, and it's because his campaign is run not to be the best candidate, but to be the most noticeable candidate.
Self-aggrandizement.
Just shows our bipartisanship here. Last year, Jonathan Gruber. This year, Donald Trump.
Yes.
We bipartisan hate everyone here. So.
Correct. Well, I mean, like, I was reading the nominations. You guys are like, oh, Caitlyn Jenner and, you know, Hillary Clinton. And I'm like, bitches, you need to sit down. Trump is the only one. He's the winner. There's no, you know.
Well, it was the only unanimous vote, so that was a good nomination.
Yeah.
Our second award, our yearly award, is the John Rawls Social Justice Warrior Trophy for advancement of a batshit crazy ideology. And it's interesting we created this award last year before social justice really blew up this year, right? Social Justice Warrior became more of a mainstream term this year. So last year, the winner was Ariane Lang. And if you remember, she was the BuzzFeed writer who claimed that The Walking Dead should be more realistic by not having the women shave their armpits. That was oppressive to the women.
Yes. Yes. What a massive bad lady.
Right, and she called me a goofball and like acted like she wasn't actually calling me an asshole when she said that. Like, the whole fiasco. Anyway, we had a tie this year. And I think the tie is quite appropriate. It was a 3-3 tie. And the tie is quite appropriate. The first was Daniel's nominee. Daniel, who was your nominee?
My nominee and the tie for winner of the John Russell Justice Warrior Trophy for Advancement of Batshit Crazy Ideology was none other than Mr. Bernie Sanders, specifically, not just for everything he says, but specifically for advancing the idea that global warming created ISIS, which he has not said on accident. He said on purpose multiple times.
Now, ironically, my nominee was the other tie, but I voted for Bernie Sanders. It was the other one in the tie. The reason I voted for Bernie Sanders is not that specifically, but just because everything he says is batshit crazy. He's like the ultimate of it. He's like, let's give everyone everything for free and also raise the minimum wage. That'll work. It's like the worst economic platform I've ever seen in my entire life.
Did you see him tweet out the other day the thing that was like, I don't understand why people can get mortgages for like 3 or 4 or 5%, but you can't get a student loan for that percentage?
Idiot.
Like, do you not understand how collateral works? And you're running for fucking president of the United States? Jesus.
Right.
And a person's house has value. Your gender studies degree does not. That's why they set those rates.
I'm Bernie Sanders. Vote for me.
The role that Larry David was born to play.
Underwear!
Underwear. And then the person or the group that Bernie Sanders tied with was the Yale students for their demand for a safe space. And then eventual firing of the, I don't remember who it was that they got fired, but they were administrators or
the
staff
headmaster members. Or something.
No, yeah. It wasn't the headmaster. It was like the dorm master or something, dorm prefect or whatever it was. But basically, people made costumes that they thought were racist. The guy's wife, the dorm master, whatever his role was, his wife sent out an email that said, I don't agree with the costumes, but I do agree with freedom of speech, aka creating a safe space for people to have the costumes they want and, you know, speak the way they want. And then they demanded that she resign and he resign because they weren't creating a safe space by supporting freedom.
Fuck you, Yale.
Absolutely insane. And then, of course, this spread like wildfire across the country, and every other school decided that they were going to have the same protest.
By the way, Clemson did it first.
Oh, with the whole...
It didn't make national news.
Right.
But, yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. The next award is, we found out, is very appropriately named. The Tom Brady Medal for Greatness in the Face of Doubters. This was, of course, given to Tom Brady last year for everyone saying his career was done after 4 games, and then he came back and got the number 1 seed in the playoffs with the Patriots, and then we gave this award before he won the Super Bowl and Super Bowl MVP, but we saw the end of that.
Yep. That's right, motherfuckers.
The winner in 2015 is Tom Brady for his response to Deflategate.
Unbelievable. A twofer.
The fact that this is what we're talking about with the media, the fact that Tom Brady could be doubted twice in a row after he won his 4th Super Bowl. We'll see with all the injuries if he goes on to win again, but I think it's very appropriate he won the first 2.
Yes. After the Deflategate nonsense, just unbelievable performance this year, especially right. For someone his age.
And the only thing that slowed him down is the injuries to everyone around him. Everyone around him keeps just falling down, and he's just like, I'll just keep playing. And he still leads the league in touchdowns and yardage.
Yes, by last game he was throwing to someone named Fitz Bunwala. I don't even know if that's a name.
Yeah, they're so far down in players who are injured that they have a black guy playing the white guy position. The slot receiver is now black.
Oh my god, they must be desperate. Belichick must be freaking out.
Okay,
put the black guy in.
Okay. 2 awards left here. The Zack Snyder Awesomeness Award, and this is just because Zack Snyder says awesome so much that we were like, let's name an award after him that's something that was just really awesome from the past year.
Yes.
And the award last year went to Firestone. Daniel, why did it go to Firestone?
Because Firestone, if you remember, we had that whole Ebola thing last year. Well, Firestone, a private company, decided to basically set up its own hospitals and anti-Ebola bases in some African countries that I can't name. And basically wiped out Ebola in those countries with their awesome treatment. And they did it all to keep their workers happy so they could go back to work. Because they needed workers. So, Firestone's awesome. Private industry's awesome. Fuck you, government.
And this year, we gave the award to more Star Wars here. Not for the reason you think, though. We gave the award to Carrie Fisher for her response to people over being offended about the Slave Leia costume.
Ooh, ooh, can I?
Go ahead.
So it's from an article, an interview, talking about various elements of the Princess Leia stuff, and the interviewer says, but there is a flip side to this. I watched a news report that an angry dad was mad because there was a Princess Leia bikini, specifically referring to the Slave Leia outfit that she wore, get it right, in Return of the Jedi. And Carrie's response was tremendous. I'll read it in its entirety because it's not that long. Quote, how stupid was that? How about telling his daughter that the character is wearing that outfit not because she's chosen to wear it, she's been forced to wear it. She's a prisoner of a giant testicle who has a lot of saliva going on, and she does not want to wear that thing, and it's ultimately that chain which you're now indicating is some sort of accessory to S&M that is used to kill the giant saliva testicle. That's asinine. Fucking awesome!
And that is how you own a social justice warrior. And yes. Carrie Fisher is awesome.
Oh my god. And totally doable.
All right. I agree. She's a hot old woman. The final award, this is our biggest award. This is the award that if you can win this award, you will go down in the annals of Midside history.
Annals, Elliot. Annals.
I was setting that up.
Okay.
This is the Romantic Manifestation Award. This is, of course, named after the Romantic Manifesto by Ayn Rand. And this is the best manifestation of romanticism over the past calendar year. Last year, we awarded this to Christopher Nolan for Interstellar. I think the front runner for next year is Batman vs. Superman and Zack Snyder. I would love to see him win that award, so I hope he sticks to the landing. But this year, who did we give it to? Daniel?
We gave it to none other than Brian Fuller for his work on Hannibal! Woo!
I'm so happy to be able to give Brian Fuller this award. He had a career year. He had a good personal year. He's a big Star Wars fan, so he tweeted out pictures of him in a Star Wars suit going to the premiere. Hannibal is an achievement. The fact that it ran for 3 years, the fact that he was able to adapt it in such a unique way and put something like that on television, it's the best work of his career. I mean, I love his other stuff. I love Dead Like Me. I love Wonder Falls. I love Pushing Daisies. All of it's great, but nothing compares to Hannibal. And it makes me look forward to his future show, American Gods, which I believe will be on Stars, which should give him more freedom to make another Hannibal-like show. So I am excited going forward. And I'm very excited. Brian Fuller has been one of my favorite writers for years. So to be able to give him this award, it makes me very happy. And it makes me feel like we're doing something right with this show. All right. Let's put a cap on this year. What did we learn over this past year, gentlemen? Daniel?
2015 taught us so many things, not just about farce, but about love and about dating and racism. But I think me personally, what I learned this year is that sports started off slowly in my life. I didn't start watching football until I met some guy named something Polish.
You're welcome.
At Clemson in 2008, and my first game of the year that I watched professionally at the beginning of a season was a Patriots game in which Tom Brady got his knee blown out and was out the rest of the year. So I haven't watched my first full Patriots season was without Tom Brady.
Oh, that was the first game? Were you there with me at the bar?
Yes.
Oh my God.
Yes.
Remember you.
Yep.
Well,
yep.
To be fair, Tom Brady blew his knee out. Is there anything else I was going to remember?
Exactly. And it started off slow. Like I kind of kept watching and was interested, but it almost like at an exponential pace in this past year, football has become such an important part of my life because of the values it metaphorically represents and the stories that are told through sports. And I never, ever thought I would be that kind of guy. And if you ask anyone who knew me from high school, I used to relentlessly make fun of football. I said it was basically a bunch of people in padding running into each other at slow speeds. And
well, that's true until you said slow speeds. Jeez.
I know. I've watched now. I was a marching band guy, so I thought the football players were a bunch of idiot jerks.
Well, they probably were.
But it has become such an important part of my life, and that is a weird part of me that I've learned to embrace. And go Patriots.
Elliot?
I think the main thing I've learned this year is that being a dude, being a guy is awesome. You know, and I don't think I realize how under attack men are in the culture, especially, and it's not just men, but masculinity is under attack. It's under assault. You know, and I think masculinity is a pretty cool thing. It's awesome to be a man. And even though I'm a man who's attracted to other men, I think that whether you're gay or you're straight or bisexual, whatever, I think there's certain traits that all men possess and that they should be, you know, celebrated, or at least, you know, they should not be condemned. I think being a man is pretty damn good. And I'm actually kind of much more defensive and a much more proud, I guess. I mean, I hate the idea of being proud of something you really don't have control over, but in a culture where masculinity is constantly being devalued to the point where men are starting to kind of wander away and hide behind trans age nonsense. And I mean, I think in this kind of a world, I think there is a certain justification or a certain rationality to taking a certain amount of pride in the fact that you're a man. So if you're any males out there, any men who are listening, it's not just okay to be a guy. It's pretty cool to be a guy. It's awesome to be a guy. And no matter what the culture says about masculinity and about being a man, you know, just ignore it, because you're important. Being a man it's so important to civilization, so important to all the cultural institutions, even the ones that you would never subscribe to men, things like the arts, like theater and music. I mean, being a man is to be part of a pretty awesome lineage, you know, of people who've moved the world forward. So don't let anybody diminish that or tear you down for that.
And now it's time for Juggies on Trampolines. Sorry. Felt like that was appropriate. Justin, what did you learn this year?
Well, Elliot's point and what he learned is a great transition into what I learned, because it starts more general like that, and then it becomes much more deeply personal. I definitely learned about the concept of male disposability this year. Katrina taught me that, and I think that affected our podcast and influenced us. The idea that we're taught that we're living in a patriarchy, but men are expected to sacrifice, and men are expected to be certain ways, that's actually harmful to men. And that creates a certain, I don't necessarily want to use the word shame, but it makes us as guys have to retreat inwards. And we're not supposed to express ourselves emotionally and let out what we're feeling and let our desires out. Because, you know, the women and children are more important than we are. And then I began to introspect a little bit more, and starting therapy, I ended up with this essay I wrote recently. If you haven't read it, it's called Silent Nights, The Other Voice in My Head. And it goes all the way back to last year's holiday season. And in the article, I investigated where this other voice comes from. You know, not just this concept of male disposability creating the other voice, but just in general, what keeps me from expressing my emotions and my desires to people. Because I often keep myself quiet when I shouldn't. And it's been very harmful to my life in the long run. It hasn't gotten me to where I can or want to be. And it got me, I think, in a situation I never thought I'd be in, that I never understood how people got themselves in those type of situations. So it's weird to be the age I'm at and have such a wake-up call. But I think I really did. And I learned about, you know, trying to figure out how I can start asserting myself emotionally, and I don't know what the other way to say it is, like to start asserting my desires as well. Because I'm okay with voicing my opinions, but that doesn't feel as personal as voicing my emotions and my wants.
Hear, hear, says the kitty.
Yeah, she had to interrupt my awesome monologue. Like, are you serious? Like, that was a deep, heartfelt monologue, and then she had to do that.
Pussy always trying to wedge their way in.
That's true.
Yeah. Well, if you learned something this year, let us know, because we really care. Honestly, truly, we're not making that shit up. Some people might say it. We mean it. We actually care. As long as it comes with a 5-star rating on iTunes, but we do care. So you go to iTunes, give us a 5-star rating. Come on. It's 2015. It's the end of the year. You're feeling a little generous. Maybe you've had some champagne. You're a little loose with the stars. Put a little fifth one on there. A little nice comment. That'd be great. We thank you so much for listening to the podcast. If I learned anything else, it's that people actually want to listen to shit we have to say. It's amazing. It's incredible. So thank you. You can go to facebook.com/themidside and like us there, or twitter.com/themidside. And for our outstanding fans on Patreon, thank you so much. Patreon, you can go there and you can sign up to give money on a per content basis. So you're just, you know, helping us keep the lights on here, the hosting and the marketing and things like that. Yeah, we sincerely appreciate your listening, and we will hope to see you on the midside, not the flip side, but the midside in 2016. So thanks.
I'm Justin M. Lazeski, and I hope you learned something this year. This concludes your journey into the midside. Good luck out there, and remember, if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a day.
Did you hear the cat yell during my outro?
Yeah, it's fine though. It's cute.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Like, she was fine the whole episode, and now she's decided to go crazy.
Yeah, it's fine.